Welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis. It's my pleasure to welcome to the program today a voice that is very familiar to many of you, Bill Felker. Hello, Bill.
Hey, Vic.
Bill, for listeners that don't recognize your voice, why are WYSO listeners aware of you? What's the program that you're doing on WYSO?
Well, I do Poor Will's Almanac on Tuesdays and Sundays, and it's a nature commentary, some reflections on what's going on in the world.
And by an amazing coincidence, you've just published the 2011 edition of Poor Will's Almanac.
That's a fact. That's true. It's out.
When you were growing up, did you say to yourself, I want to write almanacs when I grow up?
Now, I never had a clue on what I wanted to do when I was a kid, but I did spend a lot of time in the woods. I grew up in Wisconsin, and, the things I think are, that was a whole different time and age. And I used to stick my .22 rifle down my pants and walk to the city park and hunt for chipmunks and blackbirds. And I hung out there a lot. I got away with it, which was an interesting thing. I think I was in fifth grade or something, sixth grade, and did that stuff. And I remember one day I even was hunting turtles in the cooling pond for the water system, purification system for Marshfield, Wisconsin. And the police started coming, and I disappeared into the woods, But anyway, I've had an affinity for the woods, either to hide out or to just to walk and think.
How long have you been writing your almanacs? Is that since 1984?
In the 80s, I was struggling with nicotine addiction. And one of the things I started doing was to walk in the woods again, because I'd been kind of disconnected from that world for a while. And so I went back to the woods of my childhood without the gun in my pants and started taking notes. And an almanac just sort of happened. It just sort of was born. And I threw the idea at Don Wallace, who was the editor of the Yellow Springs News at that time. He was very encouraging, and he said, this is fine, but remember, if you do an almanac, you got to do it every week. And little did we all know that it would last 26, 27 years, whatever it's been since then.
Voila, structure.
Yeah, it happens.
And I've been enjoying your column in the Yellow Springs News for years, and is it also reproduced in other venues?
Yeah, it goes out to about a dozen papers and magazines. I think probably the biggest readership is Countryside and Small Stock Journal that comes out nationally. And even though I don't know much about sheep, I do have an almanac in Sheep magazine. But I've learned a lot about sheep by doing that.
I read your most recent almanac, the one for the year coming up. I read it last night, and we're right at the time when it's about ready to become current, aren't we?
Right, yeah. The natural year is about to start at the end of November. Most of the leaves have come down, and the sun is setting almost as late as it's going to set, or rather as early as it's going to set. And so the year is about ready to shift into the next phase, which will be the new year.
So we're going from late fall to early winter?
To early winter, and early winter is really that pivot time when I feel that 2011 is starting to come in.
Mm. You also have some wonderful anecdotes in here from readers. I'm guessing that these are generated from the various publications that you appear in. You seem to have a lot of fans in Indiana.
There are a number of readers in Indiana, right? I have a version of my almanac that appears in Farm World, and it's been in Farm World since 1985. And so, yeah, and that goes to Indiana and Illinois and Ohio and a little bit into Kentucky. And it's a great readership, and they have great stories to tell, to share.
Your layout of the almanac, I look back at last year's and the year before, or this year that's just ending, and have you changed the layout a little bit in this new one?
Yeah, last year in the 2010 almanac, I did a weekly version, which included some astronomical notes and then a journal, and then very often with the week, a story from a reader. In the 2011, I go back to the format of 2008 and 2007, which is more of a monthly, month-by-month format.
I was looking, and I thought, this was different. It struck me as being different, but I'm not complaining.
I try to change it each year.
Okay.
Now, that may disconcert some readers, but it's I'm working towards making it as universal as I can. In other words, as applicable to the whole country as I can. And the 2011, I think, is as close as I've come to that. So that if you live in Arkansas or California or New York City or wherever, you can apply the information that's here without too much interpolation.
Just move it forward, move it back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and in the seasonal notes there for each month, I try to say that, say, for example, when early spring comes to Ohio and along the 40th parallel, it's going to come later at the 35th parallel or along the Canadian border. It's going to be coming in April instead of March.
Uh-huh.
And in the south, it will have come in February.
Sure.
So anyway, trying to orient the reader as to how these seasons fit together.
Bill Felker joins us, and his newest edition of Poor Will's Almanac has just been published for the year 2011. I'm still not used to this new millennium. I'm not sure what to call the years. Do you have a comfortable term for the year?
Gee, you know, I don't. Looking in 2011, and I'm thinking about 2012. You know, the Mayans are predicting all kinds of momentous things for 2012. I've been contemplating what kind of an almanac I should put out for 2012. But, you know.
Well, hopefully it won't have just a blank page at one point and then just all blank pages, because that might scare some people.
Yeah, you don't want. I mean, that's pretty scary.
When we think of almanacs, at least when I think of them, I think of Ben Franklin, and I also think of the Farmer's Almanac, which I think is probably the best known. They're supposedly almost always right about their predictions. Is that true?
Well, I go on a whole different weather pattern approach than the old farmer does. There are a number of different ways to approach the weather. The most consistently accurate one is in the 2011 almanac that I have here, and that is based on the predictable number and date of cold fronts that pass through, that cross the Mississippi. For example, we're recording this on November 3rd, and the November 3rd cold front is due to come in. It's not here today, but it'll be here tomorrow. There's a rain forecast, and if you look at the forecast, that the week ahead is due to be quite a bit colder. So that's a fitting introduction to the season of late fall, when all the rest of the maple leaves come down. I find that using predictable dates for cold fronts really works, and it's worked for people across the country in the almanac in, say, Countryside magazine for years and years. So that's, to me, more useful than trying to come up with it's going to be a cold winter in New York and a warm winter in wherever.
So we're talking about the process that you use to write the almanac, and you're talking about the weather patterns. What's the overall process of doing each year's almanac?
Well, I rely a lot, Vic, on my day book. Each day of the year, I try to make a note about what's going on, and I try to notice different things each year. So, for example, for today, November 3rd, I have notes that go back to the early 80s, something for at least 15 or 20 of the past 30 years about what's happened. Now, I watch when the leaves come down on certain trees. Yesterday, I went out in the woods and I saw buzzards circling again. 25 years ago, the buzzards were gone by this time. The buzzards are staying later. Sometimes they spend the whole winter here. Anyway, I can look back on any day of the year and see what I wrote for any particular year. So if I want to find out, you know, what I was thinking in 1990, I can go back to the day book and go to November 3rd, and it's all there. So it's a cumulative record by the day. So that's where I get my nature notes. The weather notes I develop by watching the barometer here in Yellow Springs, Ohio, for a number of years and concluding that there's a pattern, that these dates that I've chosen or that have been chosen for me of when high pressure comes through this area are consistent. It happens all the time. There is a December 20th cold front, for example, and that's the first of the white Christmas fronts. It always happens on the 19th, 20th, or 21st. Huh. There's always a Christmas front. Anyway, I got that information from my own records, and by looking at it and compiling it year after year.
So we're taping this on November 3rd, but you're not hearing it on November 3rd. So if you just heard Bill say it's November 3rd, he really does actually know what day it is. It's not airing on November 3rd. So you just mentioned the buzzards. They are something very distinctive about Yellow Springs. And you're right. I have noticed them staying later in the year. And I live just outside of town, so I see them a lot because there's a lot of good meals out there along the highway for them. And I heard a story a long time ago about how the buzzards came to Yellow Springs. Do you know this story?
Well, the story I heard was that there was a farmer out towards the edge of town. I guess it was during Depression days. And I can't remember the details of it right now, but for some reason, he drove his cows off the cliff for some reason that I can't remember. And that indeed, after that, the buzzards collected here and visited that location year after year. Do you know that why the cows left, or why the cows were down at the bottom of the cliff?
I've just heard that they were attracted by all those cows.
Right,
But I didn't know. I just assumed maybe the guy had a screw loose. I don't know. Maybe they were sick. I don't know.
No, it was something it had to do with the government.
I see.
And I wrote a column about that about 10 years ago, and I can't remember the key point as to why the cows were killed.
Maybe he wasn't getting what he thought was a fair market price.
It could be something to that effect.
If it was Depression times.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they've come back ever since, and they're a notable feature of this community. If you come around the area, they obviously are living right in town.
Well, they do. And, you know, just a year or two ago, black buzzards started staying here in Yellow Springs, and they're a southern vulture. And so they have moved, or their habitat or their range seems to have moved north, perhaps a sign of a climate change. But the black buzzards
haven't. Climate change? That's not really happening, is it?
You never know,
Bill?
Beck. You never know.
I mean, I've heard from people that seem to be experts that there's no climate change, that this is just a bunch of scientists selling their studies and theories.
Well, it just ask the buzzards. I mean, you know, what do we know?
Well, when buzzards are circling, that's always a different message for me.
Well, it's I think of it as a good thing, Rick, that things are in order, mm-hmm. You know, that things are happening the way they should. That's a good thing.
I do love the buzzards. And all the other wildlife that's out there, this is an amazing area for wildlife.
It is.
As I read your columns, as I listen to your radio program, as I read these almanacs, I'm intrigued by all the plant life that you mention. Can you recognize all these plants when you see them?
Yes, that was one of the first things I started to do as I went off nicotine, you know, because I've never had a botany class or a science class, really. And so, yeah, I would buy guidebooks and go out and try to figure out what these things were. And one by one, you add them up, and pretty soon it turns into hundreds of plants. And it's fun. It's really a lot of fun. So I recommend it to anybody. Don't wait for the expert to take you on a wildflower walk, because you'll forget everything they tell you. They'll tell you 25, 50 different plants. Who can remember all that? Mm. Take your guidebook. Go for a walk.
I'm particularly fond of the fruit of the Osage tree. I think they're absolutely magnificent to look at.
They are, yeah.
And if you walk through Glen Helen, you'll see them along the ground or various places. There's a lot of them around here. What's the story? Are those native to this area?
You know, I don't know, but I think they are. And they're a wonderful. There are all kinds of gauges of the progress of winter, you know. And when the Osage fruits come down, it's usually middle fall, October. And then as they gradually turn color or are shredded by squirrels or raccoons or possums, they kind of measure the progress of winter. And they're all gone by spring. By the time you see snowdrops, the Osage fruits are pretty much disintegrated.
They dissolve, and yeah. They turn into this red splash.
They do, yeah. It's
You have some wonderful reflections and meditations in your almanacs, and one in particular that I was struck by, I will introduce this by saying, have you been up in the attic recently?
Yeah, you know, I found Robbie up there just this fall. You're thinking about finding Robbie, about going back into the attic and finding things that, well, that belong to the past and that you can't let go of. And indeed, that my attic is full of things I can't let go of. But, you know, somebody was telling me the other day, that's okay. You got to have a place for things that you can't let go.
Well, they bring you memories, and this doll that belonged to your daughter,
right?
She doesn't want it.
Right.
But you can't get rid of it, because when you see that doll, the one she probably carried everywhere at one point.
Right, yeah.
That gives you a memory.
It does. Yeah.
Actually, I wasn't thinking about Robbie as much as I was thinking, now, if he was just up in his attic, I need to go over to his house and see if he put some stuff out on the curb that he finally decided to get rid of.
Now, that's my wife's job, is to remind me to do that. But I hang on to things. And, you know, especially books.
Uh-huh.
Books are hard to get rid of, because even though you don't go back and read it, you see the cover and you say, I remember that book.
I agree. I feel the same way.
Yeah.
You also have these wonderful anecdotes and reflections that I alluded to earlier from readers. And I think a couple of my favorite ones are near the end of the new almanac, and one is about a woman who sees a mysterious car in her driveway. And then I think my absolute favorite is the fella in rural Indiana who remembers the old stove in his house. And that one just really touched me.
Yeah, he's from Switzerland County, Indiana. And
does that mean he's Amish?
No, Switzerland County is not an Amish county, to my knowledge. It's in southern Indiana, right along the Ohio River. And there have been some great almanac writers from that area. One in particular, Naomi Bliss, died some years ago, but she got her start in the almanac that I published down in Vivi, Indiana. And she went on to publish several books of her recollections and memories and stories. It's really fun to get to know these writers and to receive their stories. Mm. Because it covers a whole era of American lore. Most of the writers are in their 60s, 70s, 80s. Naomi Bliss, when she started, was 90 and wrote until she was nearly 100.
You also include some carefully selected quotations from all over time. I think you have quotes in there from Roman poets and Scott Russell Sanders, who was on this program many years ago, Wendell Berry, one of my favorites.
Mm-hmm.
How do you decide? Do you Do you just come upon something and say, I've got to save that?
Yeah, I've got in my day book that I mentioned before, I've got one or two quotes for each day. So I'm, and then I've got a box of other quotes that I try to match up with the day, or at least for the with the season. And since every week at least is a different season, you can get a lot of different quotes. Yeah, and they are sort of touchstones for me. There's a philosophy in there, and when I go back over my quotes, if they don't quite fit the worldview that I'm trying to develop, then I cut them out and add something different. But they've become the overriding spirit of the whole thing for me.
Bill Felker joins us. You hear him every week here on WYSO. He's just published Poor Will's Almanac for the coming year, 2011. And for information on the almanac, should they go to your website? Is that the best bet?
That's the best bet, Vic. Yeah, at
PoorWillsAlmanac.com.
Right, that's okay. It, yeah.
That's PoorWillsAlmanac.com. And I don't want to neglect to mention that we've talked about how you got into the almanac business, but you also literally make books, don't you?
Yeah, I make hand-bound journals and of different varieties. Some of them are rugged things that you could carry in your backpack, other more fancy with metalwork and so forth, yeah.
And how did you get into that line?
When I was in high school, I attended Holy Cross Seminary in La Crosse, Wisconsin. There used to be a bookbindery there, and it was staffed by students. And I always wanted that job, but I never got it for some reason. And so about 25 years ago, 30 years ago, not too much before I started doing almanacs, I said, hey, I think I'll play around with this. And so I've been playing around with it ever since. Yeah, it's very relaxing, but very nice, fun to do.
I've seen your work. It's beautiful.
Well, thanks.
Yeah. Bill, I'm wondering if you read other almanacs.
You know, I used to. That's The Old Farmers is sort of how I got the idea of doing essays, because I admired, and I haven't read An Old Farmer for a long time, but I admired the essayist that they had it 20, 30 years ago. And I thought that was a very appropriate thing for the season, and started doing it. It made a difference.
And I know many people probably are wondering how you decide what you're going to talk about on your radio program.
Well, that goes back to the day book again. And since I've been doing these essays for 25 years or so, I've got a huge batch of things to think about and talk about. And so the radio show sometimes comes from 20 years ago or comes from yesterday. It depends on whether I'm thinking or not thinking, or if I need to rely on something that I've done a long time ago, I can dig around and find something that, since it always, the year is cyclical, something that happens the first week in November has happened then as far back as I've been writing, so it's easy to find.
So what's your favorite time of the year?
Boy, it's hard to say. November is a beautiful time. Right, the things are opening up, and the rivers are beautiful, and the last leaves sort of glow like they do in the flowers in spring. I gotta tell you though that spring's the best. March and April, you can't beat it in Ohio.
I think September is my favorite because you have that beautiful weather. It's still a little bit warm,
yeah,
and it's dry. That's why the spring isn't my favorite, is because it's so darn wet.
Yeah.
And everything's melting. But I like them all. And I'm particularly fond of winter. I'll take winter over summer any day. And I know that sounds weird, but you can always put on more clothes. You can't take off everything when it's super hot and miserably humid. You get down to the shorts and you're like, ah, I'm still hot. Whereas in the winter, throw another log on the fire, put on another sweater, and it's beautiful. You have that pristine white that makes everything look clean when we have the snow like we had last winter.
Right.
That wonderful deep snow that was there for so long, and we hadn't had a winter like that in a while, had we?
No, and that was wonderful. I love to hibernate by the fire, and so if you have cold and fire, lately our weather's been so mild and nice, I get missing the winds and the storms, and so I get hungry for a good windstorm and sitting by the fire.
As long as it's not like that one we had a couple of Septembers ago.
Right.
The Hurricane Earl windstorm, I believe it was.
Right, yeah, that was wonderful. We sat outside and just about killed ourselves. My wife and I just watching branches and all kinds of things flying horizontally across our backyard as we sat in the porch and could have been wiped out.
I watched it from the porch, too, and I heard this huge crash, and I went over to the side of the house, and I looked around, and I thought, wow, well, I heard this huge crash. I know a tree came down. There's a big silver maple there, and I knew something had fallen, and I didn't see anything, and I thought, oh, that's weird. And so then about 5 minutes later, I heard another big crash because the top of the tree had been very tenuously resting on the edge of the roof directly above my head. And as soon as I went back inside, it came crashing down right where I had been standing. And from that point on, I stayed in.
Yeah, that was a wise thing to do, Rick.
It was like an atom smasher coming down. It was this huge top of this silver maple. And I thought, well, there's a reason why I didn't see it and went back inside.
Right, yeah.
And didn't stand there still looking for it. It's directly above my head.
Well, it's a time-honored thought that everything happens for a reason. So there you go.
There you go. Our guest today has been Bill Felker, and Poor Will's Almanac for 2011 has just been published. For information on the almanac or anything else, Felker, you can go to poorwillsalmanac.com. Thanks for listening to The Book Nook on WYSO. For The Book Nook, I'm Vic McKeonis. It's that time of year. Thanksgiving is just around the corner, and many other holidays between now and New Year's Eve. And lots of folks are pulling out their trusted cookbooks and getting ready for those holiday meals. Be sure to tune in next week for The Book Nook when we bring you Amanda Hesser. She is the editor of a fabulous new cookbook. It's called The Essential New York Times Cookbook, Classic Recipes for a New Century. And this is one of these hefty volumes that could earn a prized spot on your shelf of cookbooks. Don't miss The Book Nook next week when Amanda Hesser joins us. The Book Nook is recorded at Soundspace in Yellow Springs and engineered by Chris Hertzler.